Hello, welcome, good morning, good afternoon, good evening from wherever you're listening to episode number 8 of the Punching Pod with me, of course, Sam Brady, and the man who's kept me going through 2023, who's made it a bit more bearable and listened to me ramble on about MMA this year. Oscar Pick, how are we, son? How was your Christmas?
I'm good, mate. I've had a good Christmas, feel nice and refreshed, and looking forward to talking more about combat sports with you in 2024. I think we've learned a lot from each other in terms of both MMA and boxing, so looking forward to more of the same in the new year.
Yeah, we've flown through these episodes this year, and I've loved it. To be fair, love talking all things combat sports, and looking forward to getting into all things in 2024. There is one thing we have to do before we go into the new year, and it's all about the award show this week, Oscar. It's the 2023 award show. From my side of things, it's all things MMA, your things, it's all boxing. We're going to rattle through some of the awards we've picked out, some of the highlights we've picked out from this year. And there's been a lot. If you had to sum up 2023 in one word, Oscar, give me something.
Ooh, one word.
One word, putting you on the spot.
I would say eventful could be a good word to describe it. I mean, we've seen a lot of events staged in Saudi Arabia and in different territories, to be fair. We've just had one in Japan where Noya Inoue, who I'll come on to in a minute, has made history by becoming only the second fighter to be undisputed in two weight divisions. So, yeah, it's been an eventful year.
Yeah, it's more than one word, but I'll let you off. So yeah, as you say, yeah, it's been an eventful year. Lots to talk about this year. We're going to try and all jam pack it into this one episode. Got many categories and we're going to kick things off. And I'll jump to you, Oscar. Let you go first. Championship fight of the year. What's your pick? Go for it. Oscar pick. See what I did there.
I can see that, mate. This was actually quite a difficult category for me because there wasn't any real obvious fights of 2023 like we've had in previous years where you've said to yourself, right, that's been an absolute barn burner. That has to be in the conversation for fight of the year. So I've had to sort of dig out a few fights that have sort of escaped my memory, and I've had to avoid, obviously, the curse of recency bias, which a lot of people seem to be affected by when you're having these sort of discussions. And I've settled with Devin Haney versus Vasily Lomachenko. This was a fight that happened earlier this year. And Devin Haney was defending his belts at lightweight against one of the pound-for-pound greatest fighters we've ever seen in the sport, in Vasily Lomachenko. So it was a fight that was about as 50-50 as you could get. I mean, the people picking Haney were probably swayed by two emphatic performances against George Kambosos. And then the fans picking Vasily Lomachenko were perhaps more romanticising those amateur days and the early performances in his career, where he just looked like an unstoppable force. So it was a really intriguing fight going into it. And the fight, for me, just delivered on so many levels. I mean, it was a 12-round fight that just ebbed and flowed all the way through. If you're a boxing purist, like, it's one of those ones where you just sit down and you're completely engrossed by the technical prowess that was on display. There was no sort of dramatic moments where either fighter hit the canvas. It was just a fantastic clash of styles where you had Vasily Lomachenko, who's coming forward like he always does, but is able to counterpunch on the front foot so effectively. And then you've got Devin Haney, who's sticking behind his jab, who's moving well, who's using his feet to such a high level. And that's exactly what it was. It was just a really elite level fight that actually had a bit of controversy at the end because a lot of people thought Vasily Lomachenko won that fight, but obviously Devin Haney did enough to convince the judges on the night. And that's kind of what you look for in Fight of the Year, is not only the elite level of skill that's on display, but also an element of controversy. And I think we saw that in that fight.
Yeah, it's a great shout, actually. Obviously, Vasily Lomachenko, one of the greatest boxers of all time, and then Devin Haney, sort of this new generation. Great, yeah, great pick, great pick. On the MMA side point of view, there was a couple to choose from. I whittled it down to two. I went through the archives of this year. I rewatched a few fights. The fight that I didn't choose, but I think that needs to get a shout and needs to get recognized is Alexander Pantoja versus Brandon Moreno 2, UFC 290. This fight was amazing. I rewatched it back and I was gonna put it number one because my number one, which will probably be a lot of people's number one for fair reason, and it's my number one, is Islam Makhachev versus Alexander Volkanovski, number one, UFC 284, back in February, the start of the year. And it's my number one for a lot of reasons. Pound for at the time, pound for pound number one versus pound for pound number two. Alexander Volkanovski moving up to lightweight, in Sydney, trying to do double champ, get that double champ status. And this fight was absolutely amazing. As like the Pantoja fight, back and forward, the momentum shifted either way. One round you thought Islam had it, the next round you thought Alexander had it, and one thing you really took away from this fight, and we knew this about Alex anyway, and we'll come on to Fighter of the Year. And a bit of a spoiler, I didn't give it Volkanovski, but this year for Volkanovski is really, he's really put himself in this place where people can't question his sort of toughness, his sort of the chase to be great, and you have to rate that in a fighter that they go out and they accept all challenges, and if you look at Volkanovski this year, yes. This year he's gone 1-2. He's won one fight and he's lost two. But the two losses have been against Islam Makhachev. And yeah, the second fight he did get sent kind of into the shadow realm. But that was on 10 days' notice. That, you know, that can happen. And you rate him for even taking the fight. But the first fight, the one I'm giving fight of the year, absolutely what a great fight, back and forward, as I said. And it did go Islam's way, but it could have easily gone Volkanovski's way, and you just have to it wasn't anything sort of, it wasn't a knock on Volkanovski that he lost that fight. He could have obviously got double champ status in his home country. It wasn't meant to be, but the consensus was these guys are the best, and we want to see. And yeah, I have a moan in boxing about the best not fighting the best, but this was genuinely the best fighters fighting the best, and yeah, it was, and we got, and it showed in the fight because it was an absolute great fight, and Volk ended up on top of Islam at the end of round five, and we thought maybe that could have edged it, but did go Islam's way on the night, but yeah, absolute great fight. That one, but as I said, shout out to Brandon Moreno and Pantoja. They get the silver medal for my championship fight of the year. So yeah, that they win that one, Oscar. Let's move on now to let's go with performance of the year, because I know I don't know about you in terms of boxing, but I had a lot to choose from here. And tell me through your thinking and who's winning the award. Performance of the
Well,
year 2023.
for me, it was actually more the opposite. There was one individual who just completely stole this award, and that individual is Terence Crawford. The performance
Again.
that he sort of displayed against Errol Spence was not only performance of this year, but one of the performances, one of the all-time greatest performances in a championship fight. Going into it again with the Devin Haney Vasily Lomachenko fight, a lot of people were picking Spence. A lot of people still stuck with Crawford, but it was very much a pick and fight in that sense. And Crawford just completely tore up the script. I mean, he dominated right from the first bell up until that moment he stopped Spence. And it was just a completely one-sided fight. And for that to play out as it did, it surprised most people. But the people in Crawford's camp all expected this to happen because what we're dealing with now is a generational great in Terence Crawford, who up until this moment hasn't quite had the opportunity to showcase his talent to the world in a way that he would like. And now that he's got this, he's claimed this scalp of Terence of Errol Spence. I think he's finally getting the recognition that he deserves. And this will be the defining moment in Terence Crawford's professional boxing career that cemented himself as a pound for pound great in this generation. I think, yeah, I could dissect that performance, but it kind of speaks for itself in the sense that you've got a fighter like Terence Crawford who controls the distance so well. He nullified Spence's attributes by taking away that jab, pushing him onto the back foot, where Spence has in the past shown some competence in that style of fighting. But I think Crawford knew that the way to beat Spence was to set that tone right from early, where he had to claim the center of the ring and prove to Spence that he could deal with his size, basically. Because bear in mind, Crawford's a fighter who's come up from lightweight. A lot of people were picking Spence purely based off his size and his physical attributes. And Crawford just had to prove to Spence in those early rounds that he was big enough to be in the same ring as him. So yeah, that was a clear win for me.
Yeah, I remember watching that fight, actually. Terence Crawford is a clinic on Spence, really. As you said, going into the fight, it was kind of both guys undefeated, I believe.
Yeah,
Or,
both
yeah,
undefeated.
both undefeated. And people thought, all right, this is actually going to be a really close fight. No chance. Absolute Crawford put on a clinic. And that's why he's one of the GOATs, mate. And moving on to my performance of the year, MMA. A man who has had his ups and downs this year, actually, to be fair, in the past couple of years, but this year's he's had his ups and downs, but he gets the award for my performance of the year. It's Sean Strickland against Israel Adesanya, UFC 293. Sean Strickland, as I mentioned, for the past couple of years in the UFC's. He's not really made many waves of such. He's not really made much noise, but this year he's come in and absolutely just put his name out there and become champ. And this performance, talk about clinics. This performance was an absolute clinic he put on Israel Adesanya. And going into the fight, no one really gave him a chance. I didn't really give him a chance. And then, he goes in there against Izzy and absolutely, I couldn't believe what I was watching. I was like, is this the Sean Strickland that I've been watching for the past couple of years? It was unbelievable. He went in there, and after the first round where he rocked Izzy and nearly put him out with that, I was like, what is going on, mate? And then, for 5 rounds, he had that Philly shell. I think we actually talked about it on an early episode of one of these podcasts, but he had a Philly shell. He went in there and he just pieced up Izzy. And honestly, it was, and we talk about sort of the context going into a fight, and that's why the performance is, it makes the performance that much better. I think that's why I think Izzy is considered one of the greatest middleweights we've ever seen, but then to do that to him, it's just he had no answer. And Sean Strickland just went in there and shocked the world, literally shocked the world. And you got to say fair play to him. And now he's got this fight in a couple of weeks' time against Dricus du Plessis. So we'll see how he gets on in that one. But I mean, after this performance against Izzy, you got to favour him. I mean, obviously Dricus is coming off a good win against Robert, but I mean, if Sean can produce what he produced against Izzy, he can beat most middleweights. And yeah, it was an off night from Izzy. You could tell that. But he just had no answer. But I think Sean made him have an off night because Sean was so good. And look, if he can do that against Dricus, then it could be an early bath for Dricus.
Yeah, I was just going to say quickly
Yeah.
on that because I didn't know much about Sean Strickland going into that fight. I was more just so impressed with how well he stuck to the basics, and that's what you have to do against an unorthodox fighter like Izzy, is stick to the basics. And obviously, he was able to hurt him in the early round, in round one, and that for me was the most impressive part of that performance, is just doing the basics well to such a degree that you're able to beat someone of Izzy's caliber.
Yeah, and I think, look, Sean Strickland's always been a character, should we say. He's always made the headlines for whatever, for his comments, whether you agree with them or not. But I feel like as champ now, we've started to see another side to Sean where he revealed about his tough upbringing and the shit he's had to go through to where he is now. And he's become more of a relatable character, more of a person we can actually root for now that he's champ. So yeah, I just think props to Sean Strickland. Really great performance in that one, and as you said, just stuck to basics. But he and the thing is about him is his cardio as well. He just keeps putting that pressure on. He just keeps going. And he said in the lead up to that Izzy fight that he just spars. He just spars and spars and spars in training. And you can tell that when he goes into a 5-round fight against Izzy, where that's nothing to him. He could probably do another 5 rounds after that. So he just goes in there and doesn't even look like he's breaking a sweat and just puts on an absolute clinic. Moving on to the next one, Oscar. We're going to go with the KO, the knockout of the year. Now, I'm sure there's a few to pick from. I know when I was doing my research, going through the archives of this year, I messaged you and I was like, mate, I can't choose one. You can't make me choose one because there's so many. But if you want to describe your one to the listeners, and I'm actually going to watch it while you're describing it as well, Oscar, and you can get my reaction as well to it, because and I've sent you mine as well, and we haven't seen each other's. So yeah, just talk us through why this one stood out to you.
Yeah, so I'd actually be quite interested to hear your take on this knockout because I mean, there was plenty of knockouts that were brutal and emphatic. But what I loved about this one is just the way it was set up, basically. And it came from a fighter that not a lot of people would have heard of because he's in the super flyweight division, but Nakatani just absolutely pulled a rabbit out of the hat when he knocked out Andrew Maloney. He if have you got the clip up now then?
Yeah, I can play it, yeah.
Yep, so I'm just sort of rewatching it back now, and what I love about it is it's the way Nakatani just puts out his lead hand to create this distance between himself and his opponent, and then he dips down to the right, which is quite an unusual move for when you're throwing the backhand, and the way he launches that backhand over the top to hit Maloney right on the button is just such a clean knockout. I mean, you're not going to find many shots as clean as that, and I think the impact was made worse by the fact that Maloney was leaning into the shot. I mean, when you talk about boxers walking their opponents onto shots. That's just a prime example of how that's executed to such a high level. And yeah, for me, Nakatani gets this award. It's just a great overhand right, basically, and overhand left out of the southpaw stance even. And that is, for me, one of the most satisfying shots to watch in boxing, is just that overhand backhand. What do you think of it, mate?
Bloody hell. I've replayed it a couple of times because you know me, mate, I love a knockout. It's one of the reasons why I love the UFC so much, to be honest. As I said, going through the archives of 2023, seeing all these knockouts, that, as I said, nearly brought a tear to my eye. But this knockout, oh, it's beautiful. It's a thing of beauty, to be fair, mate. I do rate it. Yeah, you can talk about technique all you want, but when a fighter goes down like that, oh, it's just beautiful, mate. Beautiful. I can see why it won your award, mate. Moving on to my one. I mean, there was a lot to choose from, as you can imagine. In all divisions, there was honestly rewatching them all back, all of them back. It makes me realize why I love the UFC so much, because it is these sort of knockouts which you just can't get any better. There's no sort of better feeling when a knockout happens and you watch it live and you just think, Jesus Christ, like, wow. Do you know what I mean? When it just takes you back. And a lot of people say, oh, I can't get into boxing, I can't get into MMA because of the knockouts, blah, blah, blah. But for me, maybe that makes me sick, but for me, that's the best thing about it. So if anything, this might be one of the best awards for me that I'd want to win knockout of the year, because that's the whole point of going in there. You is to, yeah, win, but if you get the knockout, you're loved by fans. Getting on to my winner. Look, you had many knockouts, as I said. You had shout out to Justin Gaethje, his knockout of Dustin Poirier. Josh Emmett, couple weeks back against Bryce Mitchell, one of the most brutal knockouts I've ever seen in my life, and that could have won it. Robbie Lawler, Nico Price, what a knockout by the old vet there. But the winner of my UFC 2023 knockout of the year was Israel Adesanya's knockout of Alex Pereira in their fourth fight, in their second fight, in the UFC. And wow, mate, this knockout was just, oh, it was unbelievable. It was, when I watched it, I literally lost my head. I lost my head, mate, because again, it's about the context and it's about going into the fight, or the story behind it. And if you don't know, get to know about the story of Israel Adesanya and Alex Pereira. It's one of the best combat sports sort of backstory rivalries you're ever gonna get to see. Whereas Alex Pereira and Israel Adesanya going into this fight, Alex Pereira had already beaten Israel Adesanya three times, once in the UFC, coming to the UFC, stolen the belt from Izzy, knocking him out. No, and no one does that to Izzy. Alex Pereira does that to Izzy. So you come into the rematch thinking, God, this could be a long night for Israel Adesanya. If he loses, that'd be his fourth loss to Alex Pereira, and the rivalry would well and truly be over. This guy goes in there, and it's a back and forward fight. You don't really know which way it's going to go. And then all of a sudden, oh no, what's happening? Alex Pereira is deja vu. He gets Izzy up against the cage. He starts peppering him, body shots, knees, and you think it's going to be over again. Izzy plays possum and just throws an overhand right, and then another right, sits him down, sends him to the shadow realm, and it's over, just like that. And when this happened, everyone just went wild, because that was it. We knew Izzy had done it, finally, after years of having sleepless nights over Alex Pereira. He had finally got the win over his arch nemesis, and what a way to do it. Joe Rogan said on commentary that might have been the greatest KOs he's ever seen in his life, and It was I genuinely I could say the same, because not only was the KO just a thing of beauty, but also because you know the backstory, it makes it so much better that you just think there's not a sweeter victory for Israel Adesanya to put on Alex Pereira. I don't know if you got it there. Have you seen?
I've just seen it as well, and I think it's interesting. You mentioned obviously Adesanya playing possum there, and that's something you see quite a lot of in the UFC and in MMA. Not so much boxing, although it does happen. But I think that side of the fight game is something that doesn't get discussed enough, really. I mean, it's such a effective tactic when it's done right, and in that instance, it was basically done to a T. I mean, Israel co covering up, his back's against the cage, and he just counters him with the right hand. So, yeah, really good knockout. And as you say, the backstory sort of speaks for itself.
Yeah, literally, boom, right on the button, puts Alex Pereira to sleep. Used his own celebration against him, the bow and arrow. He did his son a bit dirty because he basically mocked. He pointed to his son and then went stiff. Because there's a backstory behind that, basically, in their kickboxing fight where Pereira knocked Izzy out and made him go stiff, basically. His son basically mocked Izzy. His like 10-year-old son, or what, however old he is, mocked Izzy by going stiff in front of him. So Izzy pointed him out in the crowd and then did the same thing. But I mean, love him or hate him, Izzy's a showman, and honestly, he put on an absolute show. So he may have been on the he may have been on the wrong end of the spectrum when it comes to the performance of the year. He came up against a dangerous Sean Strickland on that occasion, but wow, he gets KO of the year, and that just shows how quickly a year can go in the world of MMA, where one minute you're getting your belt back, you're winning KO of the year, the next minute you're losing it against. And you're coming up against a man who's just better on the night. So props to Israel there. We might have to maybe try and send awards out to these fighters, mate. Maybe maybe get into contact with their teams. You won punch, but you won the punch and pod knockout of the year. I'm
Mate, it's a
sure.
big accolade, that. It's a big accolade.
Yeah, mate, I'm sure it is. I'm sure they'll be buzzing for that. I
Yeah.
would. Do you know what I mean? I heard there's no better award you can win, mate. So we're going to move on quickly to the upset of the year now. Now, this should be interesting. Who have you gone with?
Well, I've actually gone with a very recent option, and although I said at the start of this pod that I don't want to be swayed by recency bias, I can't overlook Joseph Parker's win over Deontay Wilder. Although when you consider Joseph Parker to be a former world champion himself and having decent wins over the likes of Alexander Povetkin, Andy Ruiz Jr., coming off that knockout defeat to Joe Joyce, it was very difficult for me to give him a chance in that fight against Deontay Wilder, really, who, in my opinion, punches perhaps even twice as hard as Joe Joyce. So I think, obviously, a lot, I mentioned this at the start as well, a lot of the time boxers are assessed based off their, you're only as good as your last fight, basically, is the sort of notion in boxing. And although the Joe Joyce defeat wasn't his last fight, it was still very fresh in the memory of a lot of fight fans. And I think for Joseph Parker to just go in there and basically dominate Wilder right from the opening bell, is just an amazing achievement on his part, and it's something that no one really expected. And I think the way the fight played out just adds to the just enhances the upset, basically. The fact that not many people actually gave him a chance going into it, but then no one would have expected him to dominate the fight like he did. I mean, Wilder, obviously, his performance was just shockingly bad. He was completely passive throughout. But then you have to give Parker an enormous amount of credit for actually getting on the front foot, almost using tactics reminiscent of what Fury did by claiming that center of the ring and just pushing Wilder back, so that he's moving around the perimeter of the ring, but he's not actually getting any shots off, really. And yeah, for me, I think Parker claims this award. I couldn't think of many other options throughout the year. I'm sure there were plenty of upsets, but this is the one that just sort of stuck in my memory, really.
Yeah, I mean, Joseph Parker, I mean, he's had two pretty good wins this year, and looking ahead maybe to fight of the year, maybe he might not have won it for you, but he may definitely be sort of in that conversation. Upset of the year in terms of the UFC, there was one that really stood out, and it's in the women's divisions. It's Alexia Grasso's win over Valentina Shevchenko in their first fight, UFC 285. Wow, I mean, going into the fight, Valentina was minus 900 favorite to win the fight. No one, and when I say no one gave Alexia Grasso a chance. Valentina Shevchenko is considered one of the greatest female fighters of all time. And she went in there and she's just neck cranking her. It's not underneath the neck. But then when you realize it's under and Valentina has no other option than to tap, and Alexia Grasso becomes the new champion. Honestly, mate, this was incredible. And again, just like the Israel knockout against Alex Pereira, I couldn't believe what I was watching. I lost my head. I was like, no way Valentina just tapped to Alexia Grasso. She becomes the first Mexican female champion. Honestly, this was unbelievable, mate. And it's one of, not only is it one of the biggest upsets of 2023, it's one of the biggest upsets ever in UFC history. And I think it, for the betting odds, I actually looked this morning. She's number 12. She's number 12, sorry, in the biggest betting odds ever in UFC history going into a fight. The second fight they had this year ended in a draw. So she still retains the belt, which just shows the toughness of the girl, really, to have two fights against Valentina and to not lose one of them. Because normally you would say, okay, the first fight she submitted her, so we'll see what happens, see if she can sort of back it up in the next fight, and she did just that. That's why I love the UFC, because anything can happen, from knockouts to submissions to just outright amazing performances. This from Alexia Grasso to submit Valentina, who's dominated girl after girl. Unbelievable from Alexia Grasso. Props to her. Upset of the year goes to Alexia Grasso. Great performance. Moving on to the biggies, mate. The big ones of the year. I think this one is really what you want to win. Female fighter, male fighter. We'll start with female fighter of the year. Who have you got?
I've gone with Katie Taylor, mate, and I think a lot of people will be picking her in this category.
The goat.
Yeah, I mean, based off this year, like her early defeat to Chantel Cameron was obviously considered by most fans as a fairly convincing win, although she thought she won the fight. The majority of fans would say Chantel Cameron comprehensively beat her, and obviously, you start questioning in how much Katie Taylor actually has left. I mean, she's in her late 30s now. She's given so much to the sport, both as an amateur and a professional. She's been in so many wars. And you just think to yourself, how much has that actually taken out of her? How many miles on the clock has she actually got left? And whilst all these people were doubting that she could actually win the rematch, she was just laser focused on the task at hand, was able to block out any of the naysayers, any of her doubters, and she just went in there for the rematch, completely confident in herself. And to win the rematch in the way that she did, which was just like the tables were turned. She was the dominant fighter in there. She set the tone right from early. She what she did against Cameron, which I thought she needed to do, was use her what she has always been good at, which is her speed, both with her feet and her hands. And I think Cameron would struggled to deal with that. Basically, she when Katie Taylor's throwing punches in bunches like she did in the rematch, it's so hard to defend against that. She almost becomes this unstoppable flurry of punches right in front of you that you just can't, like, it befuddles her opponent. And yeah, she won the rematch in such great fashion that she has cemented herself as possibly the greatest female boxer we've ever seen. I mean, obviously, Clarissa Shields is in that conversation as well. But when you look at what Katie Taylor has achieved in the sport, the names on her resume, the titles she's won both as an amateur and a professional, you can't overlook her. And now, at the age that she's at, you're still wondering how much she actually has left to give. But she isn't showing too many signs of slowing down. She wants to continue in the sport as long as possible, and you have to commend her for that.
I mean, Amanda Serrano is also in that conversation, but when you look at what Katie Taylor did to her as well, and as you said, when you think Katie Taylor's slowing down, she comes back and just proves you're wrong. So, mate, 2024 could be another big year for Katie Taylor. We'll just have to see what Eddie Hearn's got planned for her. I know, I think you mentioned Croke Park in Ireland, and that would be a good event just to sort of cap off the legacy of Katie Taylor. But we'll have to see, and I'm sure there's many more surprises to come from her. A woman that I mentioned just a minute ago, who won upset of the year, mate, she's only gone and done it again. She's going to win my female fighter of the year, Alexa Grasso. I mean, how can you not? She's now pound for pound, best woman, pound for pound number one in the UFC, in the women's divisions. She's cemented herself there as well. As I said, from the follow-up fight against Shevchenko, which ended in a draw, you could score it either or. But to do what she did in that first fight, I mean, you could have given her a female fighter of the year just off the back of that performance. But then to come back and to put on a great performance against Valentina again, you just, I mean, I can't not give a female fighter of the year. I mean, there's other contenders. Tatiana Suarez, she's had two good wins this year, one of against Jessica Andrade, which maybe puts her in a title puts her in a title contention. But Alexa Grasso, I mean, I can't really not give a female fighter of the year. Great year from her, and I'm excited to see what she does next in 2024. And she's got the limited edition belt as well for the Mexican champ. They made her a limited edition colorful belt, so props to her. She's put her name amongst the top elite of the women's fighters this year, and fair play to her. She's my female fighter of the year. Male fighter of the year, hit me. Who have you got?
I've gone with a very special fighter who I think should be celebrated in this category. His name is Naoya Inoue, and he's a Japanese super bantamweight who is best known for being one of the hardest punchers in the sport, basically. Earlier this year, he beat Stephen Fulton to become the unified bantamweight world champion. And I was just amazed at how quickly he inflicted terror on his opponent, basically. I mean, as soon as Fulton felt that power from the opening round, he just did not want to know. And Stephen Fulton is a great fighter in his own right. He has beaten some of the top names in that division, and he's a sort of slick southpaw, moves really well. If anyone was going to cause him troubles, it would have been Stephen Fulton. But that power of Inoue is so frightening that as soon as his opponents actually experience that, they just crawl into a shell, and there's no coming back for them, because it's just, when you're in there with such a monster that Inoue is, they just, yeah, they're terrified of what he is capable of doing. And then to round off his year, he fought only last week against Marlon Topalez at super bantamweight, and he, sorry, I forgot to mention the first fight was super bantamweight. So he won the titles off Stephen Fulton, and then he beat Marlon Topalez to become only the second fighter to be undisputed champion in two weight classes.
Nice.
And again, with this fight against Topalez, who again is a great fighter in his own right. Listen, he had a go. He tried his best, and he was catching Inoue with some good shots. But the problem with Inoue, and is what his opponents will quickly discover, is that there's just no slowing down of this machine, basically. I mean, he stopped Topalez in the 10th round, and you just saw this progression from round after round. He was just going through the gears, and he was just stepping it up round by round. And that was just an example of how he can destroy his opponent in a sort of attritional manner, basically. He took his time, he was patient with his work, and he got the stoppage like he normally does. So Inoue is this generation's version of Manny Pacquiao, where you're seeing him go through the weight classes, and he could potentially become an eight-weight world champion like Manny Pacquiao did, because I'm looking at him at super bantamweight, and he even looks massive for that weight. So I don't know how, well, clearly the fighters couldn't deal with him in the lower weight classes. So obviously there's no limit to where Inoue can go now. I mean, he could go as high as, obviously his next step will be featherweight, but then he could go as high as lightweight, maybe even super lightweight. And you just don't know when that momentum is actually going to slow down.
Yeah, great shout from you. I've got to give a shout out to our boy Anthony Joshua. Was he not in the conversation this year? Three wins, three fights.
Well, listen, mate, when you're dealing with someone like Noya Inoue, who is knocking these guys out at the highest level of the sport, you can't look at the likes of Jermaine Franklin, Robert Hellenius, Otto Wallin, and even put Anthony Joshua in the same conversation, in my opinion. I mean, the caliber of opponents that Inoue is beating and stopping is frightening. So I think he was the obvious choice for me.
Yeah, ones to watch there for 2024. Regarding the UFC, look, bit of bias, maybe, but I'm going with our boy, Leon Edwards, of course, for Fighter of the Year. Look, I mean, two fights this year, defended his belt against Usman in the O2 in London, brought it back to our hometown, and put on an absolute clinic against Kamaru Usman, who in his own right is considered one of the greatest welterweights we've ever seen. But Leon Edwards, with that victory, but then his victory a couple weeks ago against Colby Covington, is now cementing himself as one of the greatest welterweights we've ever seen. I mean, you just have to love it, really, don't you? I mean, Leon Edwards this year, he's gone to another level. His win last year, his head kick, pound for pound, headshot dead against Kamaru Usman in his first fight, obviously made him champ, put his name out there, and then to come back to England in his home country, bring the UFC back, do it, mate, bring it back, don't worry about it, come to the O2, and to piece up Usman the way he did. And yeah, Usman might not be the same fighter we're used to seeing now, but we didn't know that back in March. And he went to the O2, pieced up Usman, defended his belt once. And yeah, there was question marks over that fight, whether, oh, As Usman was saying, it was a lucky head kick. It was nothing. I'll come back and I'll beat him. No, you won't, mate, because Leon is a different fighter. He's a different breed. He's so well-rounded. He's going to piece you up. And that's exactly what he did in front of his home crowd. And the pressure, by the way, to defend your belt in front of the English crowd. We hadn't had a UFC event in England for years. So to a numbered event, so to do that, to defend it against, and that'll probably be one of his hardest fights he'll ever have in his career against Usman, and then to defend his belt again against that prick Colby Covington. I mean, the lead ups to that fight, I mean, that would have been hard for any fighter to deal with. The stuff he said about his dad, and again, we know Leon is just so cold and composed when he gets in there, but we didn't know how we would react to those comments and to come up against a fighter like Colby. And this was a different test for Leon to be like, okay, you are cool, you are calm, and you aren't a killer when you get in there. But this is a real test when you come up against a fighter who gives it all that, who likes to say all that about your family and takes it to a place where it shouldn't be. Are you really this cool, calm killer when you are really tested? And it just showed he is. Again, he went in there. Colby didn't want anything to do with him. As you said about your fighter of the year, when you get in there with someone and you fight, sometimes fighters just know they're beaten already, like straight away. And that's what Colby was. He felt Leon's power and he didn't want anything to do with it. And it was sort of the contrast where we saw that fight against Colby, we saw how good Leon is. We just really saw how cool and composed and how good of a fighter he really is. But we also saw how a little scared and a little baby Colby Covington is, because that guy, he can talk the talk, but he can't walk the walk. Whereas Leon Edwards, there's no ifs and buts about it. That is, he is one of the best. People need to respect Leon. Honestly, people need to put the respect on Leon's name he deserves. And yeah, you can criticize him and say, oh, the one criticism you could say of him is he doesn't finish his opponents. He doesn't. We want to see knockouts. We want to see stoppages. But, and yeah, you could say that. And that's maybe why sort of Leon's stardom is sort of being restricted a little bit, because he's not getting those stoppages that maybe that the Volkanovskis and the Israel Adesanyas have gotten in past couple of years. But when you're as well-rounded as Leon, and when you're putting on just overall MMA performances as Leon is doing against the Usmans and the Colbys, who are the best in his divisions, look, I don't think you can really look past that. So Leon Edwards, Fighter of the Year, and to me, mate, we've just had in the UK Sports Personality of the Year, and the bloke didn't even get nominated.
Oh no,
How
to be fair, that was quite a shock for me,
did you not
really.
even get nominated?
Yeah.
Really? Really?
I think, to be honest, like, we're still seeing in the mainstream media, MMA still has a long way to go before it does get recognized as a sort of, yeah, sport that's accepted in society, really, which
Like,
is
no
quite.
disrespect, no disrespect to the other nominees, and no disrespect to Mary Earps and Stuart Broad. What did they win? Leon Edwards defended his belt twice, and even Tommy Aspinall, mate, he become the third.
Yeah.
Leon Edwards became the second ever English champion. We need to celebrate these victories as a country when we get them, because they don't come around that often. You saw we had to wait God knows how many years before Leon became the second ever. Obviously the first was Michael Bisping, but that was what, 6, 7, 8, maybe longer, years ago. So when these so and I saw Adam Cattrall talk about it on TalkSport, when these sort of achievements come across, we need to celebrate them. And that is what sports personality, I thought, sports personality of the year, I thought that's what that was for. But when I see Leon not even get nominated, that's where I think, come
Yeah,
on.
that's a disgrace in
Yeah,
my opinion. I can see that.
I'm not even saying win it because look, like you, Mary Earps, fine, but to not even be nominated, I mean, so put a bit of respect on Leon's name. So, mate, great awards, and I think every winner, deservedly so in 2023. How would you sum up boxing in 2023, mate? You said eventful. How would you cap it off, mate?
I mean, looking back at some of those awards, like you can sort of appreciate that we did get to see a lot of great fights this year. As you say, it's important to celebrate those who have almost exceeded people's expectations. And I think it's just set up a great 2024, really. Like we can build on this momentum that we've sort of generated from this year. And now I think we're going through a time where boxing is at the top, and it's considered as one of those sports that people do want to tune in for. So hopefully 2024 will be sort of, it'll be able to build on
Yeah, no thanks to
that.
the Saudis, I'm all right. And you mentioned that about boxing. In terms of the UFC, what a year this has been, 2023. Probably one of the best years in the company's history. The fights they've produced, the shout out to fighters like Shavkat, Bo Nickel, all these fighters that have come through as well, that we could have done another category. We could have gone on could have gone on for hours about Rookie of the Year and everything, but the amount of good fights that the company's put on this year have been absolutely amazing. I think I read something that 11 times this year we've heard "and new," and that just shows it all, where in all weight classes and all divisions, there's top level fights and there's top level fighters where no one's safe, no champion is safe, and that's where you see you've got upsets like Alexa Grasso going in there. You thought Shevchenko was safe? No, she's getting her belt taken off her. You thought Izzy was safe? No, Strickland's going to come in there. So it's so unpredictable, and that's what we love over here about the UFC. And it's just an amazing year. And you thought 2023 was good. God damn, 2024 is gonna be amazing because you've got in a couple of weeks to start the year, an amazing fight with Dricus du Plessis and Sean Strickland. That's got a backstory that we didn't even know we wanted, but now we love it. And then UFC 300, which will, by all accounts, be the greatest card in UFC history. That's in April. So tune in to the Punch and Pod to next year, because we'll have so much more content coming out of boxing, coming out of the UFC. But for now, mate, I think that's all to say. And congrats to all the fighters who have won the Punch and Pod Awards for 2023. And we look forward to 2024. So have a good new year to all the listeners, and we'll see you in the new year. Thanks for listening.